everyone, and welcome to this, the first part of the last edition of the Snake Oilers podcast series for this year. My name's Patrick Gray. The idea behind Snake Oilers is vendors give us money and then we let them pitch their sweet, sweet information security snake oil to you, the listeners. This series actually turned out to be way more popular than I expected, to be frank. It turns out people quite like listening to security companies actually explaining what they do in clear terms. But I got to say also that it was a lot more work than I expected as well. So we'll basically be halving the number of Snake Oilers interviews we're doing in 2019. But in the meantime, we have six vendors participating in this last round of Snake Oilers for 2018. We've split the podcast into two sections containing three vendor pitches each. And in this part, you'll be hearing pitches from Rapid7, White Source, and Chronicle. Now, some of you may have heard me reference the White Source interview already in the weekly show because I found it really interesting, mostly because I wasn't fully up to speed on the software composition analysis business before I spoke to them. So that one I found, as I say, I found it very interesting. I hope you do too. In our interview with Chronicle, we're going to hear about VirusTotal Enterprise, basically a new and improved VirusTotal intelligence style service for the enterprise. There's some new features here that anyone who works with malware samples or works as an incident responder will likely want to hear about. But first up, we're going to check in with Rapid7. Rapid7 is a pretty unique company in the InfoSec space, really, because mostly because of the sheer breadth of the products that they offer. They got vulnerability management software, incident detection and response software, SIEM style stuff, automation software. And they also have what we're talking about today, a web application scanner, like a DAST scanner. Rapid7's Dan Kuykendall joined me to talk about Rapid7's dynamic application security testing software, Insight AppSec. And here's what he had to say.
Well, Insight AppSec is the basically the AppSec product taken to the Insight platform. So, you know, several years ago, they acquired NT Objectives, which is how I came on board. And there was the AppSpider product. AppSpider is a DAST scanner, a, you know, web scanner, dynamic application security testing tool, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it's a, you know, a black box scanner. It scans the website from the outside. So that's what that core scanning technology does. Insight AppSec is basically taking and allowing that technology to be delivered through our Insight platform, through the Insight interface, and everything's designed to kind of work together. That's the kind of goal with our Insight products, is that they're very consistent across all the products. You know, the look and feel, the user experience is very consistent. And then we all start working toward better together stories. So,
give us a typical use case. Like, why have you chosen to integrate an app scanner into like a broader platform? What's the purpose of that?
Well, first off, just dynamic scanning is, you know, continuing to be necessary, right? Everybody's shifting left into shifting earlier in the, you know, security into the process. Well, people also still have a lot of production applications, a lot of sites that need to be scanned, and largely can be scanned from the outside. Our tool is designed to largely be production safe, right? We try to, you know, it can never be perfect because just sometimes touching an application can cause changes, right?
Yeah, I guess what you're saying is you're not gonna take anything down that doesn't deserve it.
Yes, well, we're not intentionally doing like drop table, you know, requests things like that, right? We're not doing anything intentionally malicious. So people need to scan lots and lots of applications, and this way they could do it by basically just setting up an account, logging in, giving, you know, the URL to their site and saying go, and letting it run a scan and get results without having to install anything.
I guess these types of DAST scanners are pretty handy in DevOps shops, right? Where there's a lot of changes happening in production and, you know, this is, you know, a pretty effective seatbelt, isn't it? Well, it can be a pretty effective seatbelt when something bad gets deployed into prod.
Yeah, and we've been, traditionally people used us either completely in pre-production or in, you know, in production. The DevOps has actually been a challenge for DAST scanners. Dynamic scanners have had to kind of really adapt, and I don't know how all the other tools have done it, but we certainly have had to, because in a DevOps model, you tend to want things to happen very quickly, right? You want testing to happen quickly, in a dynamic scanner traditionally would be pointed at a site and basically start from scratch and scan the entire thing. And that could take many hours, right, depending on the size of the application. And so having a blocking event that's, you know, going to run for several hours can be an issue. So it's taken some effort to kind of adapt to the pace. And that's something that DevOps has really needed DAS scanner to be able to do. So we've been kind of constantly working on tuning our scanning, and we're getting better and better at that.
So how have you tackled that? Like, is it the case now that you can just point it at sort of certain parts of an application where you know there's been updates to that part?
So from a dynamic scanner, that's actually kind of a hard concept without more information. What we've had to do is really figure out, some of it's about tuning, about understanding what is worth testing during that DevOps cycle, and just really giving users flexibility around what's going to change. So some of the things may be not attacking certain things. So let's say not wasting time attacking every cookie on every possible URL, because it's generally, you know, a single cookie handler, but in a normal instance, we would do that because it's more comprehensive, right? So it's about kind of picking and choosing and kind of giving users the ability to tune that. And then also being able to adapt to some DevOps specific use cases. So we have the ability to run, like basically, let's say you've run your unit test. Let's say you're using Selenium for your normal unit testing, right? Well, we can actually piggyback on that and say, okay, well, if we're seeing what unit tests are being run, that's the only thing that's maybe changed. So let's just attack those areas. And we can piggyback off the Selenium script, see what it's doing, and then attack based off of that. So there's a lot of these kind of, the ability to be flexible, I think, has really been the key, and giving users flexibility.
Now, it's funny because just earlier you mentioned that, it's great because people can scan before deploying to production. Is that the way most people are using it, though? Because I imagine a technology like this, you know, more often than not, and it's not, you know, it's not necessarily the great way to use it, but a lot of the time it's just going to be used to catch stuff that winds up in prod. Like, is that what you've noticed, or people are getting serious about doing, you know, pre-deployment testing?
It's migrating to being done earlier, but for a very long time, and like I said, I've been doing this for, you know, a long time. Traditionally it was security teams buying the tools and basically trying to go and scan their production sites because that was the only instance they can get a copy of, right? And running scans. So that's where like being production safe and things like that were a big part of the conversation. But it is migrating. We're definitely seeing a big, big migration to being.
So you mean people actually have real staging environments now? Ooh, fancy.
Yeah. Well, and this DevOps world has made that easier, right? Because it's very easy to push to a staging environment. Whereas before you'd have to it was probably like the older version of the server.
Right? Yeah. The old hardware rack, right?
Yeah. So now it's gotten a lot easier because they could spin up a staging environment very quickly. And then run a scan against that, and it would be exactly the same environment, right? Often containerized and everything, very same, almost identical environment as it would look like in production, maybe with the difference of some data, things like that. But
so one thing that you've really sort of made clear is that, you know, this is certainly a technology that you've built that companies can use to focus on their primary applications, right? So the focus here seems to be depth and not necessarily just smashing absolutely everything at scale, or are you doing both?
Well, we definitely can be run in full, you know, comprehensive scanning, and it'll just go and go in depth. But again, we try to give users flexibility to decide what they want to do. What is it they're trying to accomplish? And giving them pretty simple, like attack templates that are kind of based on, you know, different use cases.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was wondering, though, if you're doing sort of widespread scanning and just trying to, you know, discover every single, you know, web asset, belonging to a company and doing that sort of broad-based scanning, or whether or not you're really more focused on, you know, the larger production assets.
In the past, the customer had to come to us with their list of sites, which is a huge discussion, right? You go, okay, well, how many applications do you have? I have no idea. We don't even know where they are, right? This is where tools like Insight VM or Nexpose, right, is good at finding those assets. And we also have some other projects from our research team that are very good at finding assets, finding, you know, applications that are owned by the customer. So we allow those tools to kind of focus on that discovery component of finding the applications and helping the customer find their apps. We take over once an app is kind of found, and then we go attack that individual application.
So, I mean, do you have customers who are using, you know, Insight AppSec to scan very large numbers of servers?
Oh, yeah. We've got, you know, thousands of applications, you know, from individual customers. One of our customers, I think they scanned like 50,000 applications last year.
Yeesh, that's a lot. And are they doing this on a continuous basis? Is this like a continuous thing? Do you recommend that people just have this thing, you know, constantly running, looking for new changes that might pop up? Or, you know, you might add a new test to Insight AppSec and, you know, and then people will want to run that against all of their stuff. Like, is this a continuous process or it's more of a point in time exercise?
Right now, we do it more of a scheduled point in time exercise, but we are kind of migrating a little bit. One of the things you mentioned is the ability to kind of scan with some new tests that we just added, right? Our scanner's constantly being improved. So, you know, some new test is added. We'd want to scan maybe with a small template, right? And just say, let's just go and run attacks against everything with that. Those are the kind of things we're looking toward doing more and more of. Recently, we added the ability to do these like validation scans. So we could just go back and retest and see if what was vulnerable before is still vulnerable to kind of track improvements. But we're migrating more and more toward micro testing, if you will, but largely it's a scheduled event right now.
Now I understand too, Dan, that anyone who's interested in taking a look at this, you offer it for trial, right?
Yeah, we have a free trial where it's real easy to go and sign up. And, you know, basically you could scan our test site if you're willing to, you know, there's a couple little steps you'd have to take, and then you can actually scan your own application and you can really see. And that's really, to me, that's the most important thing. Scan your own app, see what results it's giving you. You know, look at what it's crawling and how it's testing things to see if it's really assessing your application in, you know, And part of that assessment is understanding what it actually touched, right? You can't attack what you can't see. So if a scanner can't see parts of your application, it's not going to test them, right? So
I think it's a valuable thing that, you know, people can actually bake these technologies off, particularly when they have it in mind for keeping an eye on, you know, specific production apps, to be able to grab tool A, tool B, you know, your tool, you know, throw them all at the same thing, compare the output, you know, and that's going to give you an idea, exactly, of which one's most suitable for your environment. All right, Dan Kirkendall, thank you very much for joining us on Risky Business to talk all about Insight AppSec. It's been a lot of fun.
All right, thank you.
That was Dan Kirkendall there giving us an overview of Rapid7's DAST scanner Insight AppSec. You can find a link through to the product page for that product in the show notes for this podcast. Okay, it is time for our chat with White Source now. White Source just raised a ton of money. I think it was like $34 million in their latest round of VC. They're growing really quickly, and I can see why White Source and other companies in this space are doing really well. Anyone who pays attention to information security news knows that 2018 has not been kind to the software supply chain. We are more aware than ever of how much code reuse there is out there and how little bits of code just wind up in the most unexpected places. When you build a modern app, you're going to wind up using a lot of open source code as well. And I don't mean you're pulling in large chunks of code from a few places. I mean, you're going to wind up with a crazy amount of code in your projects that comes from a million different places. And failing to keep track of what you're using can really bite you in the ass. One really bad vulnerability in a library or component that you depend on, that you forgot that you're using, well, that's how you wind up getting a call from Brian Krebs. Let's just put it that way. Anyway, White Source has built a bunch of software designed to tackle this exact problem, and its VP of product, David Habusha, joined me to school me on software composition analysis and his company's approach. We spoke a couple of weeks ago, and here's what he had to say.
When you use a common open source package like Apache Struts or Spring or any of the other frameworks, it would usually bring in dozens of other open source components as dependencies, and they may have a vulnerability inside them as well. So the first important thing to understand is that to really get an idea on your security posture, you have to have the right tools that will provide you both the widest coverage in terms of programming languages and package managers and even scanning of specific source files. And then it needs to be a very accurate system that doesn't provide you with a lot of false positives. So it needs to map the vulnerabilities to these specific components. And now we recently, somewhere towards the end of Q3, conducted a survey among more than 650 developers in which we were asking them about their security posture of open source, how many vulnerabilities they think they have. And one of the main questions there was about the commonly used open source components, namely Angular, React, Strut, Spring, Python, Django, and many others. And although if you look at the average stats, it's about 8 to 10% of open source components that have security, at least one security vulnerability associated with them. Out of the common packages, if we take like the top 100, more than 35 of them will have at least one security vulnerability. Most of them will have dozens of security vulnerabilities. And they'll usually be reused by multiple apps in the organization because when they use a certain component, as it could be a web or an app server or even a UI component, it will be used by more than one app, and usually it will be a standardized way of using that component. So it will essentially affect multiple different applications in the organization.
Well, I'm just going to go ahead and guess that trying to manually track this sort of stuff in any type of modern shop is just going to be impossible, right?
Yeah. You know, when we install our product in a typical enterprise environment and they don't usually install that on all of their apps, we know when they start using the product, they will install it on 5-10 applications at most, you know, just to get the idea. They will discover that they have dozens and more often hundreds of different security vulnerabilities associated with their open source components or the transitively dependent components, as I mentioned.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the issue there isn't necessarily that all of them are going to be exploitable, but the fact is you can't be sure, right? So maybe you want to get rid of them as close to the source, as far left as you can, which brings me to the next part of this conversation, of course, which is, you know, how are people using White Source? Like, what does White Source actually give its customers? I mean, from what I understand, you like to be involved fairly early in the dev process.
Yeah, we have an approach that we call White Source Everywhere, and it starts even before you actually use an open source component. We provide tools starting from the selection of the right components, and we have a web add-on that attaches to your browser, so whenever you look at an open source package, it could be in one of the known registries like npm.js or Maven Central, or our PyPI for Python, or any of the other repositories, or even GitHub. But also, if you just search for on any website for an open source component, it will pop up and show you the license and the security posture of this component, which vulnerabilities are associated with the version you're looking at, what is the severity of the vulnerabilities, are they exploitable or not. And if you are a customer, it will also tell if you are violating an organizational policy by using this component. So we believe that you can avoid these types of situations as early as possible. Again, the shift left approach, as you mentioned. So starting with the selection and then...
I mean, that's like shifted left past the end of the margin there, hasn't it? I mean, you've shifted left off the page when you're actually giving browser plugins to devs so that they can, you know, see if a component's a horror show before they even use it. But I mean, you know, I understand why you say it's everywhere because, you know, you've got obviously tooling that scans repos as well, right?
Yeah, and then we have tools that attach to the IDEs in the dev environment. And then we have something that is kind of a unified agent that can scan pretty much anything. You can fire it from any command line in the IDE, anywhere in your CI/CD pipeline, It's capable of scanning repos, both source-based repos like GitHub, GitLab, or any Git, SVN, or Mercurial-based repository, but also binary repos like Artifactory. And it is also capable of scanning Docker images. So we have a lot of our customers who deploy microservices shipped as Docker images, and they scan these images at the moment they finish building them. So, for example, many of our customers are building these images in Jenkins or anywhere in their CI/CD pipeline, and it's the action that follows the build of the image is to actually scan the image and fail the rollout to production in case of a high severity security vulnerability associated with these images. Same scanning technology is also integrated with pretty much any CI/CD tool out there, whether it's Jenkins or CircleCI or TravisCI or Microsoft TFS, VSTS, what's now called Azure DevOps. And also all the cloud environments, Google Cloud and AWS and Azure are also covered as well by the same scanning technology.
Now, look, correct me if I'm wrong, David, but you know, you're actually building an inventory too, aren't you, for your clients? So it's not just a matter of like you have to scan to find things. You're actually mapping out what people are using, and then you're able to trigger alerts when new information comes to hand about various bugs.
Yeah, that's correct. That's our coverage of the production environment. As I mentioned, every scan updates the inventory of the customer. And every new security vulnerability is automatically matched against all of our customers. It's a software as a service. I didn't mention that. So it's
everything is these days. Come on, we can assume that, I think, in 2018, right?
Yeah. So we pretty much calculate alerts multiple times a day, and we fire these types of alerts to the infected customers at the time the vulnerability is actually published, together, by the way, with a fix suggestion. So we don't just alert them about the vulnerability, we also provide them with the means to actually resolve these vulnerabilities as well.
Now, I'm curious too, because like I know of companies that have done little bits around the edges on this, but I don't know of another company that end to end, this is what it does. But, you know, I'm not 100% up to date. Like, who do you compete with on this stuff?
So, yeah, I mean, if you look at the numbers, basically analysts today will tell you that out of the X number of lines of code in your app, more than 80% will be open source. And, you know, if you consider the latest breaches, like what happened in Equifax with the Apache Struts and the Heartbleed and all the others, enterprises understand that they need to manage their open source usage and they need to have automated tools in place. If we look at the industry, analysts would usually call it software composition analysis, and there's several players in the industry. But it all comes down to the accuracy, the coverage of these tools, and the workflows and policies that are applied on the customer's inventory, and the way they prioritize the security vulnerabilities, which is something that we have a unique technology that is definitely worthwhile discussing as well.
So it's interesting for me to discover that it is a market, you know, and that there are multiple players. It's a competitive segment because that certainly is validation for what you're doing, as is the boatload of money that you just raised, I'd imagine.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it's really nice to be the single player in the market, because then you don't compete with anyone in organizations. And by the way, I joined WhiteSource close to 2 years ago, but the company was started in 2011, where the competition was against homegrown scripts or Excel sheets, where, you know, the
that's what I meant before, yeah, about manual tracking. I can imagine, like, 8 years ago, you could kind of half-ass it a little bit, but now, like, that's just not going to work, right? So I can, yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense that this is the thing people are buying.
Yeah, so the market is growing, and I mean, the WhiteSource as a company grew threefold from 2016 to 2017, and then from 2017 to 2018. So by the number of new customers, we definitely grew by at least by 50, but by revenue, by the number of employees, we grew by tenfold in 2 years, which is kind of amazing. That just indicates on the growth of the market. And it's not that our competitors were left behind. I mean, we definitely took a larger share of the market throughout these last 2 years, but definitely the whole market also grew significantly. And by the way, keeping on growing in 2018 as well, and we'll see, I'm sure, this trend moving on in 2019 and 2020. And the amazing fact on this industry is that although it's growing so fast, we're still speaking about a little less than 10% of enterprises using automated tools to manage their
open source. Yeah, I mean, I was straight up thinking that this is, you know, something that just based on what we know now and based on the amount of code reuse into these apps, like, and based on the fact that you can't track it with spreadsheets unless you're like straight up masochist, I think this is a segment that's going to do well. But David Habusha, that is all we have time for. Thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to give us an overview around what really sounds like, you know, for any enterprise doing any serious development, it sounds like pretty essential tooling. It's been very interesting. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was David Habusha there of WhiteSource. Big thanks to him for that. And there is a link to them in the show notes for this podcast, of course. Okay, we got one more Snake Oilers interview for you in this episode. Very shortly, we're going to hear about VirusTotal Enterprise. As you know, VirusTotal is now part of the company Chronicle, which is an Alphabet company. And they've been doing some work on making VirusTotal more appropriate for the typical enterprise user. Brandon Levine is the head of applied intelligence at Chronicle, and he joined me to tell you all what you can expect from VirusTotal Enterprise. And here's what he had to say.
So one of the things I think we should differentiate first is actually what the difference between what most people know of as VirusTotal, or, you know, the typical VirusTotal.com. Anybody, anywhere, any place can upload anything to the platform and get verdicts back from our over 70 antivirus vendors.
Yeah.
This is the same for files, URLs, IPs, and domains as well. So most people are familiar with that. Significantly less people are familiar with the premium service offerings, which were previously called VirusTotal Intelligence. And what we've done is we allow for searching all the metadata related to all those files. So take, for example, some of the Emotet campaigns that we've seen, you know, hundreds and hundreds of malware samples up in the last 2 weeks since they started up, right? What VirusTotal allows you to do is look for similar files, look for more files, files that share traits in common with those, and be able to sort of juxtapose those into a complete report or just a complete sample set to understand the full scope of a campaign. And that's really important when you're doing incident response or just a SOC analyst or if you're a hunter trying to track financial threat actors or even targeted threat actors. So now what we've done is we've expanded the capabilities of VirusTotal in launching VirusTotal Enterprise. We just launched a bunch of new features on top of our existing capabilities to create an enterprise-ready platform. So people may be familiar with our ability to hunt using Yara, which was developed by engineers at VirusTotal. It's an open source rules language that many people have been using for quite a long time. It's almost constantly iterated on at this point. And we actually allow users to search in pseudo real time, i.e. as things are uploaded to VirusTotal, they can get alerts based on Yara rules. Or we allow them to search retroactively as well using a service called RetroHunt. And previously, that service only expanded backwards 90 days, which is about 100 to 150 terabytes of malware samples. It now extends upwards of a year. So it's a significantly larger corpus of samples for people, for researchers as well.
So yeah, you get hit by something exotic, you can go back and see, you know, when it's popped up previously, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the case of targeted attacks, there was a event last week that appears to have been APT-29, Cozy Bear, or Cozy Car, as it's been called previously. And multiple reports have picked this up. You can read it in numerous places. But the TTP, the tradecraft that they used in propagating these attacks, we were able to determine that it is identical to samples observed in 2016. So it makes attribution a lot easier. We were able to match the samples from last week, November 14th and 15th, to samples that were observed in 2016. And that's just one of the myriad use cases for hunting retrospectively. Attribution isn't the only one.
No, and I like being able to use Yara rules to like search for stuff like your company name or certain company keywords, see if they're actually showing up in samples, right? Or in documents where samples are contained.
Yeah, absolutely. It is useful. While we don't actually encourage people to upload their personal files, in fact, it's actually against our terms of service, we don't want people to upload blindly to VirusTotal. You can certainly write Yara rules for things like potentially sensitive information for you or things that are sensitive to your company and see, hey, is there data leakage? Are people exfiltrating this data? Is this being used to spoof services? For example, a large security organization, their brand name was being used in URIs as part of a phishing campaign because the threat actors believed it would make the URIs more likely to be passed like the visual inspection test because a lot of users are trained now to recognize certain patterns.
Well, it makes sense too, right? Because if you're a bank and you want to keep an eye out for banking malware that actually uses the name of your bank, I mean, that would be one way to do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there are a number of financial institutions that do that. There are workflows around, hey, anything that looks like it affects my bank, I'm going to automatically download those samples, which we can do programmatically via API, and then send them to a reversing team to get the configurations. You know, in which case the bank is now able to see, okay, how is my bank actually being attacked by this malware? Not just the malware itself, but are the injections working? How is the fraud going to work? You know, we really hope to empower our community of users.
Now, the previous users of VirusTotal Intelligence, I'm imagining you had quite a lot of enterprise users there to begin with, right? Or was it more consultants, threat hunters, and, you know, really large enterprise? Like, what's the purpose of this sort of change, I guess? Like, how is it different, you know?
So we had a mix, and really what we needed to do, I mean, the UI hadn't been updated in a very long time, and it showed its age. So we really needed to overhaul it. We needed to synergize what was available on the public side and what was available on the private portal. Previous users may have noticed that you actually had to have a public instance open and a private instance open in order to use some of the functionality. That's been merged so now you actually can access all the functionality within your enterprise portal. Additionally, we needed a better umbrella to launch some of our new features, specifically something called VTEC Rep, which is the ability to do a full content search across a year's worth of malware data. So this is the ability to search for strings, hex patterns, or arbitrary binary patterns across an entire year of patterns.
You can grep across a year's malware.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So, for example, if you suspect something has a plain text command and control server, let's take, for example, unpacked samples of LokiBot. Their command and control URI is unique and it's constant. It's fre.php. You can grep for that using our enterprise service and find hundreds upon hundreds of samples.
Mm. I can imagine you would.
And you can actually do that for behaviors as well. We're now exposing our sandbox partners as behavior reports as well. So when the sample detonates in one of our partner sandboxes or our internal sandbox, you're actually able to query based on the behaviors therein as well. And it's for the same time period, about a year back. So you could search for anything that actually exhibits that behavior as well. So if something's packed and you can't even see that URI, doesn't matter if it executed in a sandbox, you can search for that behavior and get matching samples.
So who's your ideal customer here? I mean, I'd imagine it's still going to be enterprises that have teams that are responsible for malware stuff, like more than just running the corporate AV, right?
I mean, the use cases are pretty diverse. Starting from the SOC analyst use case, basically the SOC analyst is especially prone to just wanting to be able to triage data. They need an answer, good, bad. And VirusTotal can help automate that, just get them as much information as possible, as quickly as possible, either automatically into an alert via APIs or just by a GUI exploration. You know, that's a pretty typical use case. I just need to know, is this bad? Is this good? Is there anything else I know I can use with this to make an informed decision? You know, and then once that analyst hands it off to an incident responder needs to understand the full scope of a campaign. You know, a SOC analyst or whatever security product is, it may only detect the first alert that is just the tip of an iceberg, right? But an incident responder needs to get the entire scope of an intrusion attempt or just or an active compromise
in and order that's to where be your able graphs to effectively remediate. Come in handy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The data that is available in VirusTotal can also be viewed in a graph in graph form. So you can actually get a full visual representation. If you're sort of visual type of guy like me, you can sort of get a complete idea of the way malware and its components are related. And we also have now the ability to create private graphs and the ability within those graphs to create sort of private nodes, data nodes, things that are representing victimology, representing maybe internal labels for threat data, things representing potentially sensitive data that you wouldn't want actually shared as part of an open source threat report. We now have much more granular controls around graph.
And how much does this cost, right? Because you're telling me I can grep that much malware, and I'm guessing, like, I'm just thinking of the compute costs there, and I'm thinking, you know, is this cheap? I'm guessing it's not cheap.
It's actually relatively inexpensive for the amount of compute and the amount of power that we offer to our users. We bill about $900 a month for basic features. And we bill monthly, so it's basically a monthly quota that resets at the end of the month, at the beginning of the next month, and then all the way up to negotiable amounts of data or access. We offer things like URL feeds, so a complete feed every hour of all the URLs that we have seen, and that's about 3 million a day. We also offer something called a file feed, which is about 1 million net new samples a day that we observe. So all the data around that is also available. That's a little bit more expensive, but we scale from very small shops to extremely large shops.
So yeah, what you're saying is like it goes from like 900 to whatever, depending on how much stuff and how many features you want to use and how many boxes you want to check.
Absolutely. And I mean, the more you, and we also offer the ability to try it out so you can understand, hey, this is my use. These are my use cases. These are probably what I'm going to need. So you don't have to blindly buy, okay, a ridiculous amount of API queries or too small amount of API queries and exhaust them. We want people to be able to use this data to protect themselves. So we do offer trials for this platform. VT.com/learn has additional information about that. And we also have directly contact us at info@virustotal.com.
Now this has been launched for something like a week. What's the response been like so far?
So far, we've gotten fairly positive feedback. The feedback has been mostly positive. As with any launch, there are going to be bugs and gripes, especially when you have 12-year-long power users. We are very actively iterating on the deployment itself. So what you see right now is the core, and then we're constantly adding improvements and features and bug fixes as well. So we don't just launch and abandon something until the next update. We are constantly updating.
Because you're a modern DevOpsy shop, right? Like very, very hipster, very now, very 2018.
It's very interesting because the company VirusTotal has been around for 14 years and they have always operated that way.
Yeah.
So it's just a sort of par for the course for us to keep on keeping on.
Just like mowing the lawn. Brandon Levine, thank you very much for joining us on Snake Oilers to tell us all about VirusTotal Enterprise. It's been very interesting.
Thank you for having me, Patrick.
That was Brandon Levine of Chronicle there with a look at VirusTotal Enterprise. Big thanks to him for that. And that is it for this part of our last Snake Oilers edition for 2018. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I'll be back in a couple of days with another weekly news episode. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.